Hey everybody, I'm Scott. It's fundraising time again at antiwar.com. We need your help, and here's how you can help. Stop by antiwar.com/donate or call Angela Keaton, our development director, at 323-512-7095. That's 323-512-7095, or you can shoot her an email over to akeaton@antiwar.com.
Thank you very much for your support.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. Thanks for listening. I'm Scott Orton, and our first guest today on the show is Jason Zanin. Oh, geez, I should have asked him how to pronounce his name right, but that's probably pretty close. He put together this really interesting website. It's called executedtoday.com. Welcome to the show, Jason. How are you?
I'm great, Scott. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Did I say your name right?
It's actually Zanone, but
Zanone.
You wrote the name like Zanone, you learn not to be particular about how people say it.
Right. Well, I should have asked you before we went on the air, and then, you know.
I told you.
I'm going to spell it out phonetically here, and then maybe I'll get it right when we go out to the first break. We'll see. Anyway, so Jason Zanone from executedtoday.com. Where'd you get the idea for this site?
Somewhere in the dark recesses of the human soul. I think it's just always been kind of knocking around, and it's basically just, it's an almanac site that ties historical executions to the anniversary dates that they occur. You know, I don't know where it came from, actually. I think it predates the internet. I always had kind of an idea that would be kind of a cool, dark coffee table book, and then sort of the blogging format really made it the way to go.
Cool. Well, I've been really enjoying getting these in my email every morning. Everybody, you can sign up for the daily email. It's just like, oh, on this day in history, only every day it's somebody who was murdered by the state. And I guess you don't pick just, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer or I guess he was killed in prison by another prisoner. But anyway, you don't pick regular just death penalty cases, right? This is all political or not all?
It's not all political. I really try to cover the gamut. I mean, to me, and other people may have different reading preferences, but I guess, you know, it wouldn't be that difficult to write this site and every single day is like, you know, someone who killed his wife for the insurance policy or some, you know, miscellaneous mass murderer.
Right.
But that would be, I mean, fundamentally be kind of repetitive. So I do a little of that because that's part of the picture of the death penalty, but it's more interesting to me is when you can use it as a window into some sort of historical situation, just a wide variety of ways that people have lived and died.
Now, one of my favorite anti-war conservatives is the great John Basil Utley. He writes for us at antiwar.com, and he keeps the site Americans Against World Empire at againstbombing.org, I think it is. And his mother, Frieda Utley, was a famous anti-communist writer back in the days, wrote A China Story, I think is what it's called. And he's the one who turned me onto this site and said I should take a look. And then the link he sent was your coverage of the execution of John Basil Utley's father by the Soviet tyranny. Why don't you tell us that story?
Well, and much of what I write is ultimately kind of secondarily sourced. So John Utley himself dug up a lot of this story, as did his mother, over a period of decades. But basically, his father was a Soviet citizen, a Russian Jew, and just got one of these sort of knocks on the door of the apartment in the middle of the night when John was an infant, and they never saw him again. So Frieda in her youth, Frieda Utley, had been a sort of leftist and met John Utley's father, his name was Arkady, and they ended up moving back to the Soviet Union. But this also sort of occurred about the time they were kind of getting disillusioned, but they had actually given John Utley his mother's name, so it would be a little bit easier at passport control if they had to make a kind of quick exit since he had a foreign name. But anyway, so he sort of disappeared into the Soviet gulag, and Frieda and John fled the country, and they had some influential friends they could call on. So they were, you know, they were going through, you know, George Bernard Shaw and Bertrand Russell, and sort of contacts with ambassadors and things like this, trying to push, trying to get some kind of information. And they were ultimately able to find out that he died in the camp. But it wasn't until after the Soviet Union collapsed and it became possible for relatives of the deceased to request information about the fate of people who had been arrested in political purges, for John Utley to get the files, which I think happened in the early 2000s, but it was all at risk of making a mistake. And he ultimately went back and sort of visited the prison camp in the Arctic Circle where it turned out that, Arkady had been shot by a firing squad.
Yeah, I mean, imagine really living your whole life without your dad, and you don't even know what happened to him. You know that the NKVD came and got him in the middle of the night, and that's the last you heard.
Right.
Jeez. Kind of reminds me, actually, of a picture that I saw of a maybe 9 or 10-year-old kid in Iraq with a little cardboard sign that said, "Please, where is my father?" I guess it was the American NKVD that came and got him.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and
that's
one
not what we call them, though. We call them heroes.
No, indeed. And obviously, you know, a case like this, which we know basically because he had a foreign wife and a foreign son that were able to push this later, stands in for lots of people who died in ways that are not necessarily executions per se. So, I mean, you know, to the person on the receiving end of it, a firing squad or cluster bomb,
yeah,
amounts to very much the same thing. So my side, I try to keep fairly well focused, but, you know, in a sense, these people are also standing in for this sort of complex of institutional violence they live in. So most people in the Gulag weren't executed by firing squad. They're just worked to death or, you know, died from maltreatment. So that's
right.
Yeah.
All right. Now, so, on the front page of Executed Today, you have a button over here on the right side, 10 executions that defined the 2000s.
Oh, dear.
Let's talk about that a little bit.
Oh, this is classic blogger link bait, you know, top 10 lists and things like that. So this went up at the end of the 2000s, and I was trying to capture the view at that moment of what are some of the most memorable, noteworthy executions of that decade. So, obviously, Saddam Hussein is a clear number one on that list. But it's, you know, it's a smattering. It's guys in sort of different situations. The second guy on that list is the former head of China's Food and Drug Administration, says anglicizing the title, who basically took bribes to rubber stamp dangerous products, and China made an example out of him shortly before the Olympics. You know, the Bali bombers who the terrorist bombing in Indonesia were executed in 2008. One of the ones that's sort of most powerful now is Cameron Todd Willingham, who you may remember as the subject of a profile in the New Yorker a couple of years ago, basically exploded the case, the state's pseudoscience arson case against him.
Right. I remember his story. Yeah. Explain that one in a little more detail, please.
Well, he's one of the strongest sort of potential wrongful execution cases, which of course has not been officially acknowledged by the state in any way. And a lot of this information was actually available when he was executed in 2004. He basically, his house burned down while he was in it, and his children, I think three children, if I've got that right, and he got out of the house, but his very young children did not. And so they charged him with arson, and, you know, sort of based on that and some circumstantial stuff that, like, he was allegedly, you know, he was a party boy, and so therefore the fact that he had kids was going to, you know, was crimping his lifestyle, and he didn't look adequately concerned about getting back into this burning house when he got out. So it's some sort of circumstantial stuff, and they brought in a science, forensic testimony, which happens very frequently. You know, you get these sort of forensic testimonies that have the imprimatur of science upon them to provide the definitive evidence for the jury, and they say, yes, these burn patterns that we could observe proved that he poured kerosene on the floor as an accelerant, and so obviously he started the fire.
Well, and then it came out that, no, they were liars, and the guy was already dead at Rick Perry's hand, right?
Essentially, yeah.
All right, I'm sorry. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Hold it right there. We'll be back, everybody, with Jason Zanone right after this. I think I said it wrong again, man.
You can put the Liberty Radio Network on the air in your area. Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how. Broadcast.lrn.fm.
It's all live from baseball, the Apple Pie Bob. Waco, Texas, Heaven's Gate, the Oklahoma Bob. The Desert Storm Syndrome experiment that went wrong. Inject our own because they probably won't come home anyway.
The Vietnam conflict was a mere experiment, so just came back.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Jason Zanone about this awesome website, executedtoday.com. Sign up for the email list and you get a, on this day in history, the state murdered this guy or that lady or whoever. That's very interesting stuff. And we're talking about this guy who was executed by the criminals that run the land of Texas. This guy, Cameron Todd Willingham, 2004, and I'm sorry because we went out to break right at the good part there. You said that the so-called forensic scientist people testified at the trial that, oh yeah, he had poured liquid accelerants all over the floor. Then the state killed him, and then what happened?
Well, the horrible thing about it, really, one can always be in a position to say retrospectively, oh, we screwed up, and that's obviously awful. I mean, the guy is dead, but they were in a position to know that they had screwed up before they executed him. He was convicted in the early 90s, at which point arson forensics was at kind of a folklorish stage where it was sort of little bits of received wisdom that got handed around. This is my understanding as a non-forensic investigator. I welcome correction from anyone who's in that position, but essentially it became a more sort of scientific and objective science over the succeeding years while he was in death row and his appeals were playing out. But before his appeal, he maintained his innocence the entire time, but before his execution and his clemency pitch to the governor, I think it may be the last sort of judicial filing or two that he actually had arson investigators lined up. The same people basically are being quoted now that said, look, their scientific testimony for why this had to be arson not only makes no sense, but it actually correlates with why it would be an accidental fire. And so you can actually see some video of this theory of action. It's called flashover. But I mean, essentially this is in the filing that went to Rick Perry, and he didn't get, he was asking at that time for the 30-day stay, which the governor could grant so that they could investigate this a little bit more and make it an actual sort of ruling on this. And he got short shrift from the governor at that time. And this is, had been around in the anti-death penalty sort of community. This is actually a guest post written by somebody in that world a couple of years before this thing came out in the New Yorker and really kind of made headlines. But, all that information was available to the state of Texas, before they dropped the plunger. So.
Well, of course, there was Carla Faye Tucker, who Bush mocked on Larry King, said, oh, please don't kill me, which she had never said. And this was a lady who had completely turned her life around and was helping everybody else in prison and whatever. And the entire, I think every single faction of any religious community in all of America was begging for clemency for her. And he went on TV mocking her, paraphrasing something she never even said. And then that was before the people of this country turned out by the tens of millions to make this man president. After he sat on national TV going, oh, man, please don't kill me, in her voice, supposedly.
I think that was in a private interview with Tucker Carlson. I could be wrong about that, but
it was
so
Bush Jr.
Because Bush thought it was a friendly audience. And he thought he could kind of do that kind of stuff. Like, he was so shocked that he sort of Bush realized he screwed up.
Oh, I thought it was Larry King, but yeah, you may be right that it was Tucker
right
put him at ease.
That would be everywhere.
Yeah, amazing. Anyway, yeah. So anyway, everybody, the site is Executed Today. It's about state murders of people for various reasons, and they got one for 365 days, and apparently you've got also on this day for quite a few of these too, so hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of notable historical executions. And in fact, it looks like the top one here, Thomas Hardy, is not a man who was executed, but a man who lived a particularly long and interesting life witnessing executions of every description, huh?
Well, he only apparently saw two, but coincidentally they were separated. One was August 9th and one was August 10th of 2 years later, so this gives me an excuse to... I'm always looking for excuses to get a little bit out of the business of strictly being about death, because it's slightly morbid.
Well, it says here that he wrote about the Napoleonic Wars all the way through the First World War.
Yeah, basically he got sort of some of his short stories are kind of from stuff that his dad told him from the Napoleonic War days. So there's the link there is to a short story about someone who had a chance to assassinate Napoleon but didn't have the gun. So it's one of his lesser works, but he sort of spans this time where England was very much in the hanging business.
Very interesting. And then so he wrote about war the whole time, or all different whatever? Tell us more about
his guy. I'm going out of my depth to do literary critique. Thomas Hardy, but he's a gloomy kind of author. Tess of D'Urberville is probably one of his most famous heroines, dies by hanging at the end. And so the one that's actually mentioned this day for August 9th, if you sort of scroll further down on the page, is a woman that he actually saw hanged in 1856, who's thought to be sort of part of the inspiration for that. She was a battered woman who kind of snapped in a confrontation with her husband and hatcheted him to death, and then he was there and sort of witnessed her hanging very stoically and kind of disturbingly sexily. But this thought to have sort of informed this character he created later.
I guess tell some of your favorites from Executed Today.
I was afraid you were going to ask that, and I was trying to think of what they are, because you turned through them so quickly. I revisit some of these things like old friends I haven't seen in a while. Like, oh yeah, I haven't thought of that. A couple of days ago, Hiroshima Day is also the anniversary date of the first use of the electric chair in the United States, which
really?
Is a fantastic story of Americana. Basically, Thomas Edison was in a PR campaign to save his direct current electric empire, which would ultimately fail because
Tesla, I don't like where this is going at all.
It's going exactly where you think it's going.
No.
Tesla had created this much more efficient alternating current, which was being run by Westinghouse, so they were in competition. The word electrocution comes from these traveling road shows that Edison was doing, electrocuting animals, sort of large fauna, up to elephants, to show how deadly alternating current was, his competitor's current, and with the upshot of you don't want to wire houses in New York City this way, because then, like, if you touch the volt, you might just drop dead because this stuff is running around in your house. It's a scare campaign. So the electric chair was coming. I mean, simultaneously, New York was looking to replace hanging, which had a couple of botches recently, and so they sort of made a nice little match. Edison convinced, especially lobbied and helped convince the New York legislature to go with the electric chair using alternating current, Westinghouse's standard. Westinghouse wouldn't sell them the generator, so they had to get it indirectly through resale from someone in Brazil or something like that. And then on the 6th, August 6th, 1896, I may get that wrong, 1892, they tried it out on this guy, William Kemmler, and it was a horrible botch.
Wow. Can you do 10 more minutes here?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Everybody, I'm talking with Jason Zanone from ExecutedToday.com. Sign up for the email list. We'll be right back. Anti-war radio. Anti-government killing people radio.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.fm.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm talking with Jason Zanone from ExecutedToday.com. Sign up for the email list. Get a this day in history, the state killed this guy or that guy every morning in your email. Okay, so a couple of notes here. First of all, of course, you were absolutely right about George Bush and Carla Faye Tucker there. It was a print article, a print interview that he did with Tucker Carlson. The question was about Carla Faye Tucker on CNN, who, of course, never said what Bush paraphrased her as saying. So, of course, you're exactly right about that. And then secondly, I wanted to say about George Bush that there was, before he was the president, and I think before he was even actually officially running for president, he did an interview with, I don't know, Country Time magazine or something. It was a little hill country newspaper from the one of those counties, West Austin, somewhere, anyway. And it had him with his pretend cowboy hat and all this and his feet up on the desk and whatever on the cover. And they asked him about commuting the death penalty sentence of Henry Lee Lucas, the serial killer. Mm. Right. And of course, you know, the detail there was that he really was not guilty of the one that he was sentenced to death for. He was in another state and it was a proven fact and it couldn't be, so he had no choice but to commute the sentence. But the way he explained it to the interviewer was, look, I've executed a lot of people, all right? But on this one, you know, the lawyer said I really absolutely had to commute it because he was just in another state, and if we could get him on another one, we'd do that or something. But that was his initial response was, I've executed a lot of people. That's his defense of himself, this guy.
Right.
Anyway, so well, we're back to the first, or if you have something to say about that, go ahead. Otherwise, to this first execution with the electric chair on Hiroshima Day, 1945.
Yes, it's a nice confluence of events.
Love these guys. So wait a minute, you say that this election, this thing in 1945, this first one, the electric chair, was completely botched. What? How long did it take the guy to fry?
I don't have the page up in front of me. I'm not going to be able to quote it. It took him, I believe, two or three applications of the courage. So they ran him through once, and everyone in the room was very nervous, and then they turned it off, and then they realized he was still moving, and
forgot the wet sponge on his head.
Panic hit the room because they didn't. I mean, they were making the stuff as they went. I guess we better turn it on again. So
madness. All right, so tell us some good ones from history. I don't know, World War II or the American Revolution or ancient Rome. I don't care. You can do whatever you want. I'm interested.
Well, World War II is one of the sort of go-to spots anytime there's kind of a thin date. Obviously, World War II provides legions of potential executions. I think you just had an interview yesterday, I believe, you were talking about Andrei Vlasov and some of the guys who were repatriated under Operation Keelhaul.
Uh-huh.
Vlasov's date actually just passed a few days ago, and I took a pass on him because I wanted to do a sort of more thorough treatment, so that means I have to kick it down the road another year. But there's a similar one that we did for the Ukrainian Nationalist Army, which is a really kind of interesting formation. I mean, these guys are Ukrainian nationalists. There's probably a lot not to like about them, and ultimately they, you know, wanted to, or their aspirations were for statehood. They were being ground between these two massive tyrannical states, and they probably really had no good choices available to them. But yeah, they basically tried to make nice with the Nazis in order to get out from under the Soviets, and that didn't work, and they were on the wrong side of that after the war, obviously. There's probably no way that story was going to have a happy ending, which obviously was true for a lot of people in that area of the world in the 1940s.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to read your write-up of Operation Keelhaul. That's got to be the biggest unreported scandal in the history of anything that ever happened. I mean, when did 3 million people ever get killed at the hands of the Democrats and it didn't get written down for anybody to read about later? You know?
Well,
that's amazing.
I think you should hook me up with someone who's a brilliant expert to write this, since I'm just some guy who runs a blog.
But you know
the guys who know.
Well, Jacob Hornberger wrote an incredible, that's the interview you're talking about, and he wrote an incredible piece in 7 parts called Repatriation, the Dark Side of World War II, you know, as opposed to the light side of it, I guess.
Right.
But, yeah, that's the best treatment of Operation Keelhaul I know about outside of books, you know?
Right. Well, I'll definitely follow that one up. Some of the best pieces really are the ones where people who are truly subject matter experts get to come in and write about this, because if anything, my expertise is kind of like marshaling a lot of dates. And I end up jumping around from spot to spot and since I'm trying to write the story of the situation, that people are living in, World War II is one thing where we kind of have some known reference points, but you sort of land in an unfamiliar time and place, and the first thing you have to do is try to figure out who are these people, what's going on, why did this person die? So when I'm able to get an expert who really knows the terrain to do guest blogs and interviews and things like that, and we've had people talk about the Great Fire of London. There was a guy who was basically just sort of mentally ill and insisted on claiming credit/blame for it and got hanged as a result, even though nobody thought he was guilty. It's a really interesting case. There's an absolutely heartbreaking case called the Pappenheimers in Bavaria in 1600, and they were basically just sort of poor, itinerant laborers who got caught up in a witch persecution at the wrong time, and they just butchered this entire family in the most horrendous fashion possible in front of their small child, who was made to watch this. And then several months later, they decided we better stay on the safe side. The kid might be infernal too, and they executed the kid as well. So,
man, human beings are really weird, aren't they? I can't really figure it out, man. I'm trying to picture a situation where I'm gonna be one of the members of a mob witch hunting people and killing kids and stuff. I can't see it, but. It happens all the time, I guess, you know, stuff like that. Hell, in Africa right now, they have, witch scares where they go around, murdering people for superstitious reasons, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately most of us would like to think that we wouldn't be that kind of person that would join the SS or join the Lynch Party or something, but in the right time and place, I guess I tend to think that most of us are, myself included, susceptible to be that guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they prove with the Stanford prison experiment and whatever, is that they can basically come to any neighborhood and make 5% of the people the guards of the other 95% and then leave them to it. No problem.
Yeah.
Just all enslave each other, do anything we want. Amazing. It's like, different period of history. Like, if we go to, say, deeper into the Middle Ages, because I find that this is how I don't do this enough, but this is really how to learn history, is reading biographies and really getting that sense of time and place. Is there stuff that, certain executions of the Middle Ages that kind of really bring you to what it was like in that era? Or pick an era. I don't care. Go ahead.
Sure, sure. No, I mean, I guess I just want to be hesitant about saying that it brings you to what it was like, because there are so many other facets. We notice the witches that get burned, but lots of people who weren't witches lived, other forms of life. There are a lot of peasant revolts in the 1200s, 1300s, 1400s. Basically, they universally get crushed. They follow this predictable script where they'll have some initial success of the peasants sort of angry at the local nobles, break out in some sort of episode of violence, and often they're going strong for a couple of weeks, but they're peasant armies, so they have to get back to their crops, so the energy dissipates, so they run into, armored cavalry or something like that, and the peasant leaders just tend to suffer the most horrible possible fates. So this is, there are these stories all over. And many of them become heroes later on, like Gyorgy Doja in Hungary is kind of in that category.
Amazing stuff. I highly suggest everybody you check out executedtoday.com. Sign up for the email list there. And, there's even a random execution button if you just want to see what you can see. It's, like I've been trying to tell you, it's not left versus right. It's the state versus you. Right here, executedtoday.com. Thank you very much for your time on the show today, Jason.
Thank you,
Jason Zanone, everybody.